Well, I'd like to welcome you all to Risen Life, and those of you who are online. I am not Jared. My name is Mike Kirby. I'm one of the elders. I will tell you that Jared is praying. He has texted me twice. I'm not certain whether he's praying for me or for you. I think I'll take it either way. But I'd like to welcome you. Also, like to welcome Sean and Rachel back. It was great to hear Sean's laughter, and we're going to pray for them at the end of the service, but yeah, I'd like to say welcome back. So today, we're going to continue in our discussions of the Ten Commandments, and we've been walking through the Ten Commandments. This is a little bit different than we've done in the past. Typically, we go through chapter by chapter, verse by verse. And in this case, we decided to slow down and look at each of the commandments and kind of expound on those and look at how those connect across the Bible. And so we've gone through three of the commandments, and we're now to the fourth commandment. And the fourth commandment and the fifth commandment, the one that I'm going to do today, and the one that Phil Herz is going to do next week. So Phil has taught before in Iglesia Risen Life, but next week you should come back because he's going to teach for the first time in front of this body. He and I, Phil and I, are getting to do the two positive commandments. So by positive commandments, if you look at the list, there's lots of don'ts, lots of thou shalt nots. There ends up being two commandments that are affirmative. One of them is the one we'll do today, which is concerning the Sabbath, and the one that we have next week, which is concerning honoring your parents. So I get the privilege of one of the two. As I read about this commandment in the commentaries, the sad part is this is probably one of the most divisive commandments. And by divisive meaning, almost every commentary I read commented on this, which is if you want to pick one commandment around which the church will decide to argue, it is this one. And the nature of the arguments, I mean, in some sense are good natured. They are things like, well, does it hold now or not? If it holds, does it hold on Saturday or on Sunday? If you choose a day, what do you do and what shouldn't you do? So you can imagine with discussing the Sabbath, the challenge we're going to have today is probably in your mind, you're wanting one of these in terms of an answer. Most people coming into a service like this, they hear about the Sabbath, they're seated looking at their neighbors thinking, finally, I will be vindicated because I'm right and they're not. That's not the goal of today. The goal of today will be to understand Sabbath in its context, to appreciate what God meant by Sabbath to the people to whom he gave it, so originally to the Jews, and then to understand how it has been made complete in Christ. Before moving on to that, and in honor of my family, I did look up whether there was any country song, and I would say I'm only going to make a reference. I'm not going to comment. And I say this because Sunday, as a day within Western culture, does have I would say significance in that. Probably for those of you who listen to country music, there's even a song that says, "That's what I love about Sunday," right? And he goes off singing about going to church and sitting on the porch swing. I would say, secondly, again, in honor of my family, I had to come up with a dad joke. And Jared had mentioned this one. Sunday and Monday get in a fight. Who wins? Well, Sunday, of course, because Monday is a weekday. Yeah. That was as close to humor as I get. All right, so with that, let's go ahead and look at the commandment. Let's go to Exodus 20. I am not known for my humor, so let's go to Exodus 20. Let's look at the commandment first so that we understand it. Also, what I noticed is this is one of the commandments that takes up many verses. So reading, starting with verse 8, so this is chapter 20 of Exodus. "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within the gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and he made it holy." All right, so we now have the, in some sense, the official commandment. What did God actually say within the Ten Commandments? And here what we're going to do this morning is I want to kind of tease this out in three parts. So I was trying to think about, you know, how do you present this in a way that would be meaningful? And I think what I'll do is deconstruct it, what I'll call chronologically. And I try to, you know, like all, I'm learning from Jared, all these symmetries, you'll see this as I tried all these things of three. Pastors don't just seem to do anything in twos or fours. And so the three sections we'll have today will be before the fall, before the cross, and before his return. So working on alliteration in respect for Jared. So before the fall, so, and this will be important to understand context. We see this within the verse itself. Before the cross, so this is the way of understanding what did Sabbath mean to the group to whom it was originally given. And then before his return, here referring to Jesus, and helping to give insight into how do we engage with the Sabbath. Okay, so before the fall, and the reference before the fall, I think I view it in two ways. One is relative to what was actually stated within the commandment, which is a reference to Genesis. And the other one, and I listed here Matthew 19:8, and that is looking to the words of Jesus. And in this particular context, in Matthew 19, Jesus is using this when the Pharisees are trying to trip him up concerning divorce, and they ask him certain questions. The reason why I'm referencing this is not because of the section on divorce, but rather it's interesting that Jesus says, it was not so from the beginning. And why that's important is it helps us appreciate the fact that Jesus, when he was discussing with the Pharisees a very critical point concerning the law, Jesus went back to Genesis. So not only do we find in the commandment a reference to Genesis, but we have Jesus, we have a statement within the Gospels for which we know that Jesus looked back. So I think it is important for us to ask, what happened before the fall? What's the beginning context? So if we go to Genesis chapter 2, and we look at what was referenced in Exodus, it says in Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3, "On the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done. He rested on the seventh day from all of his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation." So I think the first thing we want to observe here is that there is a reference to the Sabbath day in Genesis. I think there's a couple interesting things here that are, I would say, lost on us because in the English language, we translate it Sabbath, and we often connect it with Saturday in the sense of we think of it in terms of the days of the week and the labels we use. But in Hebrew, the word Sabbath, they don't use the word Sabbath, they use the word Shabbat. The meaning of the word Shabbat is rest. And so if you think about it in context, they have what is equivalent to, not in their language, but equivalent to Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, etc., all the way up to the final day of the week, which is the day rest. The actual label, the actual word means rest. So within Hebrew, within their culture, the 7 days of the week, the actual day of the week, is called rest. And it is rooted in Genesis 2. So that's number one. The first important thing is it's connected that the word they actually use is the word rest connected to Genesis 2. The other, I think, important part for us to appreciate is that it says that it was holy. And I think one of the challenges, again, for us in English is that we use this label holy in reference to God. And we think of it as God is holy, and we see in the New Testament, be holy as I am holy. But unfortunately, we use this as a label, right, this word holy, and then we never talk about it other than holy. Unfortunately, right, for those that are secular, it gets as a label that's holy put in front of something that's probably not good, right? We get holy in a lot of other bad words. And the question is, what does this word holy mean, right? We use it, we hold it up in reference to God, but we never really kind of discuss what holiness means. So I think relative to today and relative to Sabbath, and why it's important to appreciate this in the context of Genesis 2, is that although not a complete expounding of what holy means, for today, think of it as to set apart. So we use the term sacred, but when we read Genesis 2, and when we read this word, when you hear this within the rest of this morning, as I use that term, and I will interchange it, hopefully to kind of spark your ear to think about it, when he says things such as, remember the Sabbath day, to keep it set apart. So whenever you hear that term, holy, think set apart. Like I said, holy is even more expansive than that. But for today, I want you to think about that. So we now have what happened before the fall. And relative to the context before the fall, we don't have an explicit statement concerning us doing things or not doing things on the Sabbath, other than it is a day to be set apart. It was made holy. So the second point will be the idea before the cross. The next reference we have to this day of Sabbath is actually not Exodus 20. Do you recall when is the first time we hear of Sabbath in the Old Testament? Again, this is a pop quiz. Hopefully you were paying attention to Jared earlier. It actually is Exodus 16. So the first reference we get to this idea of Sabbath is in Exodus 16. I'll read just part of that. And the reference here is to when the children of Israel complained, God provided manna from heaven, and the context of Sabbath in that discussion was he provided manna for six of the days, and God explicitly told them on the seventh day, you're not to go pick up manna. So picking up in Exodus 16, we'll start in verse 22. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, this is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a set-apart Sabbath, holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over lay aside to keep until the morning. So they laid aside the next morning as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink. You remember your, for those of you who grew up with the King James, it stinketh not. So it didn't stink, and there was no worms in it. Moses said, eat it today, for today is Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, and on the seventh day, which is Sabbath, there will be none. Now, like us, and like all of our children, on the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather. So God says, there's not going to be any manna. What do? Just double check to make sure it's exactly what he said. They went out on the seventh day. And the Lord says to Moses, that, you know, you can tell God's long-suffering, because he says, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, so God is pointing out to Moses the fact that all these people are out on the seventh day looking for manna. He said, see, the Lord has given you a Sabbath, therefore on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each of you in your place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. So our first kind of engagement with Sabbath in the period after the fall and before the cross is actually a story concerning God giving to the people of Israel and explicitly wanting them to set aside a day of remembrance, so set aside a day for which they will exercise their dependence on God. So it's the first baby step in their journey, the first baby step in the sense of the first commandment for which he's trying to stretch out their faith. He's stretching out their faith by saying 6 days you will gather and there's going to be one day that you don't gather. And like I think Peter in the New Testament, kind of they pop outside on the seventh day out of their tent and they look for manna. And God says, see, I told you, I got it. I give you enough on 6 days. So the first time we see Sabbath is in Exodus. The next time is actually in Exodus 20. And I think when we get to Exodus 20, and we appreciate this in the context of the Jews, Sabbath is taken very seriously by Orthodox Jews. I want to read to you from Judith Shulevitz. So this is a writer. She was writing, she has written for, I think, the New York Times and a few other places. She wrote a book entitled Sabbath World. So she is Jewish by descent, and you'll notice this in her comments. So this was referenced by Tim Keller, and he was, Tim Keller was attempting to help his congregation appreciate how those of Jewish descent, either Orthodox Jews or those that are ethnically Jewish but still maintain the traditions of their culture, how they view Sabbath. And Judith said the following. She says, quote, "My mood would darken until, by Saturday afternoon, I'd be unresponsive and morose. My normal routine, which involved brunch with friends and swapping tales of misadventures and the restless quest for romance and professional success, made me feel impossibly restless. I started spending Saturdays by myself. After a while, I got lonely. It did something that, as a teenager, profoundly put off by her religious education, I could never have imagined wanting to do. I began to drop into the synagogue. It was only much later that I developed a theory about my condition. I was suffering from a lack of Sabbath. There's ample evidence that our relationship to work is out of whack. Ours is a society that pegs status to overachievement. We can't help admiring workaholics. Let me argue instead on behalf of an institution that has kept workaholism in responsible check for thousands of years." Continuing, she says, "My people mistakenly believe that all you have to do to stop working is not work. The inventors of Sabbath," so here she's not quite appreciating that I would say God, "God understood that it was a much more complicated undertaking. You can't downshift casually and easily. This is why the Puritans and Sabbath and Jewish Sabbaths were exactingly intentional. The rule did not exist to torture the faithful. They were meant to communicate the insight that interrupting the ceaseless rounds of striving requires a surprisingly strenuous act of will. One that has to be bolstered by habit as well as by social sanction." So I read that to kind of help us appreciate that from the Jewish perspective, Sabbath is a very important day. And it's not just that it is the end of the week, but even more so, it is a day for which you prepare. So as you come to the end of Friday and you're waiting, in Jewish tradition, you're waiting until the end of Friday and the beginning of Saturday. The beginning of Saturday will be what we would think of as Friday night. The beginning of Saturday is there was night and day. So for them, when three stars are visible, you can imagine in Salt Lake, we wonder whether any stars are visible. But at some point, when three stars are visible, it is technically the next day, and that is the day on which Shabbat starts. And for them, there's actually a procedure to prepare for Shabbat, to prepare for, as she said, this downcycling and preparation for the ceasing of work. I never kind of appreciated how complex this was until I had the opportunity to travel to Israel. And I was asking my colleagues in preparation, how could I kind of be respectful? And they said, well, there's a couple things you need to know. One of them is that the elevators stop on all the floors. I was like, the elevators stop on all the floors? And they said, yes. They said, as soon as Shabbat happens, what they do is they reset the elevators so that you don't have to press any buttons. So they also, their advice, you can tell how practical engineers are, their advice was don't stay in any really tall hotels. Because otherwise you have to stop at every floor. So the second thing they warned me was to appreciate the fact that there will be no hot breakfast on Shabbat. And the reason is, as we saw in Exodus 16, following the commandment, is they don't cook on Shabbat, so they prepare before. And so they told me that you won't get warm eggs, meaning you won't get scrambled eggs or eggs over easy. You'll get boiled eggs that were prepared the night before. Again, preparation for Shabbat. So the two things that they didn't warn me of, one of them I should have expected, was that you can't type on Shabbat. I took my laptop down to the lobby, and I was thinking I was being quiet. I was in a corner, and I got told off by the Shabbat police because they told me that I should not be typing. Like I said, I should have gotten that one because the elevator pushed the buttons. Right, that was obvious. The one I never appreciated was crossing my legs. I was seated in the hotel. I crossed my legs, and I got told off for crossing my legs on Sabbath. And I actually asked, I was like, where's that in the Bible? And apparently it's work to cross your legs. So I was told off for crossing my legs on Sabbath. Being respectful of them, I think the point of this is they take it very seriously. And we see this, and we'll get to it when we get to the New Testament. I think Jesus kind of pushed on this a little bit to remind them that they may have taken it even too seriously in the sense that they put in more rules than actually the commandment itself mandates. I don't think you'll find in either the Old Testament or New Testament that crossing your legs is work on Sabbath. But they take it very seriously. So I think there's three ways in the Old Testament we see them taking it seriously. So we'll run through these quickly. The first one is that they view it as sacred. So this is the term we use connected with holy. So again, when you hear sacred, think set apart. Let's look at Jeremiah 17. So we've already had the verses in Exodus, but here we get in the prophets the idea of sacred, Jeremiah 17, verses 21 and 22. Thus says the Lord, take care for the sake of your lives and do not bear a burden on the Sabbath day or bring it to the gates of Jerusalem. Do not carry a burden out of your house on the Sabbath or do any work, but keep the Sabbath day sacred, holy, separated, as I have commanded your fathers. So I think, you know, in kind of meditating on this, I think one of the challenges we have in the Western world is there's not really an analogous day for which we set them aside. I mean, you might argue Sunday in the sense of the Christian tradition, but unlike, say, the Jewish nation with Sabbath and their feasts, we don't really have this sense in Western culture. I mean, the closest we have probably is birthdays and anniversaries. So Alice and I, we had our anniversary this week. I won't tell you which day. But if you think about it, relative to anniversaries, wedding anniversaries, and birthdays, they are days in which, for all of you, that particular day was just another day. But for Alice and myself, it was a day of reflection and kind of remembering kind of what we were doing or not doing, right, on that day. So I think when you hear keep Sabbath holy, the closest we'd have is kind of the excitement you get when you remember a birthday or an anniversary. It is that you set it aside in the sense of it's a day for you and, in the case of an anniversary, for you and your partner to remember that. And in this case, for the Jewish people, it was a day to remember what God had done. So point number one in terms of before the cross is that they held it to be sacred, set apart. The second one is that they held it to be a sign. So if we go to Exodus 31:13, he says, you are to speak to the people of Israel and say, above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between you and me throughout your generation, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you, set you apart. Similarly, in Exodus 31:17, he says, it is a sign forever between you and me and the people of Israel that in the 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. So before I read the last one, which is from the prophets, did anybody have a secret handshake with friends when they were young? You realize God had a secret handshake? I was thinking about this. I never had a secret handshake. I was too nerdy. Actually, passed notes in hexadecimal ASCII notation to my friends, which totally confused the teachers, and we would laugh. But the point here is God had a sign. He had a secret handshake with his people. Now, what's the point of a secret handshake? The point of a secret handshake is it's something you can do with your friend, and you know the fact that between the two of you, it has meaning. And for those that are outside and see you doing it, they have no idea what you're doing, other than they know it's a secret handshake. Right? They may not know what the rhythm of the handshake is, but immediately they know that there's something between you. God had a secret handshake, and that was he set aside a particular day of the week, not only so that his people would remember the covenant that he had with them, but so that people outside would look, and we see, and we actually see this through history. If we look at historical writings concerning the Jews, it was often commented that this, that there was a characteristic of the Jews, and that was that they would not work on the last day of the week. So again, it was a sign. It was a secret handshake. If we look at Ezekiel 20, so again, to kind of see that it was not just within Exodus, but Ezekiel, the prophet, mentions this in verses 11 and 12 of chapter 20. I gave them my statutes and made known to them my rules, by which if a person does them, he shall live. Moreover, I gave them my Sabbaths as a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctified them. So, point number two, God gave them a secret handshake. So it's a day set aside of remembrance, sacred. Number two, it's a sign. Number three, and again, I was trying to figure out the alliteration. The third one will be, it's a spree. And then I put in parenthesis, I think you'll see for spree, it's a celebration, but I wanted three S's. But the reason why I actually looked up, if you think of the word spree, why is spree the appropriate term here, is a spree is an unconstrained activity. So it's actually more than a celebration. The reason the Sabbath was a spree was that they were to be fully unconstrained relative to their expression towards God on that day. So they were constrained in other things, the things they were not to do. But relative to focusing on God, they were unconstrained. Now, where we get this view of the Sabbath is actually in Deuteronomy. So if we go to Deuteronomy 5, Deuteronomy 5 has, I think, two interesting functions here. One of them will be that this idea of spree is explicitly referenced. The other one is Deuteronomy 5 is a repetition of the Ten Commandments. So you see the Ten Commandments as we have been discussing in Exodus 20. Deuteronomy 5 is a reiteration of those commandments. And for almost all the commandments, they're exactly the same. And by exactly the same, meaning within the Hebrew and within our English translations, you get the commandments stated exactly the same. In the Sabbath commandment, we actually get more. So if we look at Deuteronomy 5, let me flip over there real quick. Starting in verse 12, observe the Sabbath day to keep it set apart, holy. As to the Lord your God commanded you, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your oxen or your donkey or any other livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates, that your male servant, your female servant may rest as well as you. So very similar, right? Almost word for word the same as what we saw in Exodus 20. And now we get, starting in verse 15, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So Deuteronomy here, the repetition of Exodus 20, is meaningful not only because it has this addendum. The addendum is telling us why he did it. It was a time of celebration to remember that they had gone out of Egypt. The other one that is important to us is to appreciate to whom was Deuteronomy written. So if Exodus is written to the parents that exited Egypt, and for 40 years they were in the wilderness because of the spies going in and them not having faith, this is the reminder to the children, those that possibly were still in Egypt. Right? These would have been the ones that were in preschool possibly when they were still in Egypt, right? So the ones that fell below that cutoff. But God wanted to make explicit to the group of children that now have come of age and are about to go into the promised land, right? To them, you know, make fun is probably too strong, but we kind of look at the children of Israel and we'd say, how could you forget, right? I mean, the Red Sea was split. How could you forget it? In this case, I mean, if you're being genuine to a bunch of kids, right, meaning there's a bunch of 4 and 5 year olds and they're running around as you the parents are trying to get them through the Red Sea and you're running around kind of, come on, right? They're not paying attention to the fact that God has split the water. Right? For any of you who have kids, I have 3 of them. I can't imagine what it would be like trying to get them through. They would be the ones that were poking the water, right? I mean, come on. So why that's important in this is Deuteronomy 5 is the commandments repeated to that group. So these are the young people. God wants to make sure that they fully appreciate why he gave them this commandment. It was a reminder that they and their parents were saved out of Egypt. So it was not only a day made sacred because of what God had done in Genesis. It was not only a sign, God's secret handshake, but it was meant to be a spree, that is, a celebration of what God had done. So this gets us to the third point, which is, how are we supposed to view it before his return? I think as we come to his return, as we come to this, there's lots of verses, well, shouldn't say lots. There are many verses in the New Testament, I think, that Christians pull out to try to justify Saturday or Sunday, what you should do, what you should not do. That's not, I think, the focus I want to give today relative to the Exodus 20 context. That is, if we appreciate that God gave the commandment as sacred, that is, set apart, as a secret handshake, and as a spree, how should we, as Christians, view this commandment in light of the cross? Meaning, on the other side of the cross and before his return. I think it's important for us to appreciate that, for instance, in Matthew 5, we know that Jesus said that he came not to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. So I think it's natural for us as Christians to ask, what does that fulfillment look like? And not be ready to come up with a category, Saturday, Sunday, yes, no. Let's step back from it and ask, what would this commandment mean now in light of what Christ has done for us? So I think there are 3 points that we'll get. I want to start by reading something from Dallas Willard to set a context, because he was asked this question, and he wrote this in his book, The Great Omission. He said, this is the question, quote, what is Sabbath? Biblically, it is a day once a week that we do no work. He now quotes Exodus. He says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the 7th day, it is a Sabbath to the Lord. In it, you shall not work, quoting Exodus 20. It was also a year, once every 7 years, when God's covenant people did not sow, prune their vines, or store up in harvest. This is Leviticus 25. And to the question, how are you going to eat on the 7th year? God replied, I will so order my blessing on you that in the 6th year, I will bring forth a crop for 3 years. The year in which you're harvesting, the Sabbath year, and the next year while you're planting. So God didn't give them just 2, but he gave them 3 years of harvest. And now Willard says, the moral principle certainly applies to us as well as the non-agrarian contemporary life, though our faith will be greatly challenged in working out the details. Very practically, Sabbath is simply casting your cares on him. Here quoting 1 Peter 5. To find that in actual fact, he, Christ, cares for you. It is using the keys of the kingdom to receive the resources for abundant living and ministry. So I want to set that as a context for how we will answer, what does Sabbath mean for us before his return? And I think there's 3 things that we get. And for those of you who wonder, is this going to be as long as the middle point? The answer is no, this is a shorter point. So there are 3 things I think that we should appreciate that we take away, we as Christians, on Sabbath. The first one is, it is a day of remembrance. So the context here through church history is that in Mark 16, so kind of lay out the argument, Mark 16, 1 and 2, we have that when the statement, when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. So this is speaking about the resurrection. So the first thing to appreciate is that we have a reference to Sabbath and the day after Sabbath. So in terms of church history, kind of following the logic, we see in the Gospels a reference to Sabbath, the Sabbath day, and we have the day of what we refer to as Sunday, as being the day in which Christ was resurrected. We then have several references in the New Testament. Acts 20, verse 7, it says on the first day of the week, when they were gathered together to break bread, Paul talked with them. So we have a reference in Acts that the people of God were getting together on the day that was after Shabbat. So that is the day the Lord was resurrected. We have 1 Corinthians 11, so this is often repeated in our communion service. I think the important point in 1 Corinthians 11 is to appreciate explicitly that we get when you were gathered together. So we hear, again, this reference to gathering. So there seems to be a consistent pattern of Christians choosing a day on which they gather. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. Now concerning the collection of the saints, this is Paul speaking, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so you also are to do on the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper, so that there will be no collecting when I come. So again, we have a reference of Paul to the first day of the week. And then in Revelations 1:10, we have explicit statement, John here writing, he says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. So here a reference to Sunday. So in terms of the question of Saturday or Sunday, the church tradition follows the idea that Jesus was resurrected on the day after Shabbat. And we see in Acts and in 1 Corinthians, we see a recording of the church gathering together and setting aside the Lord's Day, using the Revelation, the John's term, the Lord's Day as a time to gather in remembrance. And by remembrance here, the fact that we were appreciating that Jesus rose from the dead for us. There are two verses that I'll bring up, two kind of references, and again, I think these have been misused in history. Relative to our context, we should appreciate why they were used. Colossians 2, 16 and 17. Paul writing, and so from what you can get in context is there was probably some discussion concerning should we do something on Saturday or Sunday, and he answers, therefore let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food or drink or with regard to festivals or a new moon or a Sabbath. So there must have been some discussion, there must have been this kind of debate, is it Saturday, is it Sunday, what should I do, what should I not do? And he effectively says, let nobody pass judgment on you. These are a shadow of things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. So here we have Paul writing concerning all of those, and that they were meant as a sign, as a shadow of things. And then I think in Romans 14, verses 5 through 9, we get a little more kind of an explicit statement. Again, Paul doesn't answer Saturday, Sunday, what should you do, what should you not do. But he says, one person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. So immediately we have, again, a context. They must have been arguing about something like this. Each one should be fully convinced in their own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in honor to the Lord. The one who eats, eats in honor to the Lord, since he gives thanks to God, while the one who abstains, abstains in honor of the Lord and gives thanks to God. And I'll stop there, but I think relative to Romans, a takeaway from that would be that the principle we are to remember is that whatever we do, it should be in honor to the Lord. So for those in our Christian fellowship broadly that may say they choose to meet on Saturday, should we view them with contempt? The answer is no. We should appreciate that we are following a tradition of the New Testament meeting on the Lord's Day, setting aside a day for remembrance. But we would encourage anybody who chooses a day to choose it in a way that honors the Lord. And we are choosing Sunday as a day to gather together to honor the Lord. So point number one is that we do Sundays as a day of remembrance. The second one is that we do it as a day in which we can relent and rest. And I think there's two verses here. The one that's clear on this point is Hebrews chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. If you recall, again, this is the pop quiz. We went through Hebrews. This was something we discussed when Jared went through the book of Hebrews. This is an explicit reference to their time in the wilderness and entering into the promised land. So we won't read all of it, but starting in verse 9. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter that rest so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. So in Hebrews chapter 4, we see that in Christ, we now have that Shabbat. We have that rest. And this is connected back to what Jesus said in the Gospels. Matthew 11, 29 and 30, he says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you Shabbat. Now, it was Greek, but if we now take the Greek word and appreciate what would be the word rest and remember what we said about the Hebrew, in their hearing it would be, and I will give you Shabbat. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find Shabbat for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So the second thing we find is that we use Sunday, we use the day of Sunday not only for remembrance, but we also use it as a time to relent and rest, to fall upon and reflect on what God has done through Jesus, and to, in some sense, sit in it. By sit meaning to actually be able to reflect and appreciate and cease from our striving and be reflective on that. Okay, band, you can come up. And I think the third point now is that Sunday becomes a time of commissioning. So why it's a time of commissioning, if we think about this, read a couple of verses. John 5:16, Jesus, this is in the context, this is the broader context of the Jews making, I would say, making fun of him, antagonizing him over the Sabbath. And he says, and this was why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing things on the Sabbath, on Shabbat. But Jesus answered them, my Father is working until now, and I am working. Mark 2:27, he says, this is Jesus responding, he says, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of Shabbat, of the rest. Let me read quickly from Spurgeon. So Spurgeon took this statement about my Father is working until now and I am working, that statement by Jesus, and he said the following. He says that Jesus taught, Spurgeon taught that Jesus took care to do some of the grandest miracles upon the Sabbath day, and though his though this excited great wrath against him, as though he was a lawbreaker, yet he did it on purpose that he might see the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. The sum of the Lord's teachings was that it was for works of necessity, works of mercy, and works of piety. The Christian Sabbath is not a day of inactivity. This is still Spurgeon speaking. Rather, a person should rest from his normal labors to labor for the Lord. Through works of piety, individuals should attend church services to worship God. They should set aside time in their prayer in their homes for prayer and reading. They should go to Sunday school and do street evangelism and visitation. By works of mercy, Christians should serve as doctors and nurses and care for the sick. For works of necessity, believers can cook meals and walk to church and still be employed as soldiers and fire workers and policemen. Spurgeon believed that Jesus' example did not abolish the Sabbath, Shabbat, but it gave Christians an accurate portrayal of the Sabbath observance. So I think the third reason we gather together is, in some sense, our commissioning. it brings meaning to or a concrete day in which we can remind each other of Matthew 28, 19, and 20, and that is, we have been told to go, therefore, and make disciples. So we get together on Sunday not only so that we can remember what Christ has done, and not only that he is our rest, right, that he is our Shabbat, but also it's our day to get recharged and to be ready for the commission that God has given us. So as we're coming to a close and in this last song that we're going to sing, I think the thing that you should think about as we sing this song is that within Western culture, since actually the time of Constantine, we've set aside Sunday. And I think if I, obviously by this group, you've all dedicated a time to come here. The thing I'd like you to think about as we sing this song is setting aside a Sunday, probably for a lot of us, is our default. But how do we make Christ Lord over all? How do we make sure that every day is a Shabbat day? That not only Sunday is the day that we dedicate to the Lord, although I certainly encourage you to continue to come and fellowship together. But as we sing this, reflect on how do we make sure that we don't view him as only the Lord of Sunday, but he's the Lord over all.